the Business Ethics Podcast, brought to you by the Business Ethics Alliance, exploring the ethical questions of today to create a more equitable tomorrow.
Welcome to the Business Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Peterson, and joining me today, Tim Rexius. Tim, thank you so much for having me in your studio to record. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. This would be great.
Yeah, we've actually tried to record this podcast once before, and I only recorded half of it. So we had to come back and do it again. It's been a few months. The topics have probably changed a little bit, but something that hasn't changed is you being, a very large voice and a very large piece of the business community here in Omaha. I mean, you're kind of a serial entrepreneur. If you drive around Omaha, you see Rexius name, you know, tatted on buildings as you roll through. And not only in Omaha, it's also Nebraska statewide. It's now going nationwide as well. Yeah. You are the owner, a part owner of Iron Heaven Gyms. I understand there may be more than one hand in the pot, but I met you almost right when you opened up the first gym. And so you've been in that since day one. And then now, Protein Popcorn.
Omaha Protein Popcorn, 42 states. So,
already.
And looking to go international here relatively shortly. And then Vital Health International is the parent company, nutraceuticals. And we're in about 32 states with the supplements. So, yeah.
Dang, 32 states. So, when you look at that, and you're just like blown away at how fast you've been able to grow these businesses?
Yes and no. It's just the way that I set my standards. I don't feel like we're there yet. It's funny when I speak, and I'm going to be in Vegas this weekend speaking with some big distribution companies. I fly back, and I get to speak at Ralston High School, and it's a real humbling experience because I'm going to go talk to companies that are been around 10 times longer than me, that are 10 times my size, and so it's humbling. Then the next day, I'm in high school, and people are like, look at all you've done so far, and I'm like, well, yeah, but I want to be in the other room I was in yesterday, you know what I mean? And I want to be in that four-year room, that international room, and so, like, I'm very proud of what we've done, and the game has changed a lot, especially the last couple of years compared to what I came into, but it's a humbling experience, but also, like, just where I have my goal set, we're not even close.
Right.
Where if it's a 10-step ladder, we're on step two.
Wow.
And that's how I am, and that's how I think. But that also keeps your eye on the prize, I guess, so to speak. I don't sit back and pat myself on the back a whole lot. So.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see, man, you guys can't see it on video, but I'm rocking a sweatshirt I bought 11 years ago when I my second or third year Rexius and some flip flops I bought for $4 on vacation 5 years ago. So
yeah.
I keep myself pretty humbled and pretty basic. But
yeah, no doubt. I mean, I guess you do probably have some newer Rexius hoodies you could put on, but
this
you're sticking with the old fashioned.
Yeah, old school, man.
Tried and true, baby.
Yeah, version one.
Yeah, I've got a Cubs shirt that has holes all throughout it. My wife trying to get me to give it away, but
no, that's lucky. Man.
Yeah, man. I end up out in public in it. I don't even care.
Yeah.
It's all right. You got to really appreciate those. But those are some pretty ambitious goals you had. Now, has that always been the goal that you've had in front of you? Do your goals level up over time?
I'm a big picture guy, that's for sure. Not gonna lie, I'm significantly more ambitious than most people know, I'm not the type to put my stuff out there on social media like everybody else does.
Yeah,
that's kind of seems to be the new thing. I'm people, when they get to meet me and we get to really have meetings, I get to do a lot of job coaching, they get to see how truly ambitious I actually am. And they're like, I had no idea. Like, you know, and that's because I'm truly thankful for what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't big time it. I don't show for flash. I don't do those kind of things. And so when I first started Rexius, no, the goal was to have 30, 40, 50 locations. It absolutely was. I also just knew that I wasn't going to say that. I was going to be thankful for every customer that came in the door and for every single location that opened. And I want to make sure I did it right one by one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain brands, see with the Rexius brand, where people were like, they want to franchise instantly. There's one chain in town, and it's good business model, but they opened 60 locations in 1 year. Well, I'll be at 40 here within the next few months after 12.
Right.
I'm okay with my model.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm literally concerned about every single location and every single owner and franchisee and every single employee. So it's just, I have a longer profit model, which allows me to be more sustainable. So yeah, I had these goals. And then the thing is too, is like these goals have to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things are going to happen in the marketplace, are going to happen in the economy, they're going to happen in just society in general. You got to be able to adapt. So it's a constant you know, readdressing our goals. I mean, Matthew McConaughey did this speech a couple years ago. He was chasing somebody's 10 years in front of him. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it was pretty epic because that's literally how I've done it. And, you know, we started one gym, right?
Yeah.
It's just this gym. That's going to be it. See, it was the Rexy Salinger families, 50-50.
Yeah.
And then a year later, I'm like, hey. And I'm usually the one that I got big picture ideas. Yeah. And my business partners are awesome in the fact that they'll challenge the ideas, we'll do the thing. And we're all very smart. We come from our own different experiences. But I'm like, in two locations, and then a third location, and expansions, and those kind of things. And then all of a sudden, they're thinking of the ideas because we're all seeing these things work. And, you know, VHI supplements and OPB, protein popcorn company. I mean, yeah, that's a lot of me in that. And we have some partners in it as well. But, you know, that's a big vision. I created and launched the popcorn about 4.5 years ago. Most people don't realize that. And rebranded it recently from Omaha Performance Popcorn to Omaha Protein Popcorn Company. But, you know, I had a dream like, hey, I've seen these snacks going worldwide. I'm seeing the things in the industry. And my wife and I in our kitchen, 600 batches later, figured out a recipe. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's been a lot of money and no profit for a very long time. But I'm a long game player. That's it. It's a long profit model. I was always taught that anything that comes quick goes quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I've got international dreams with that. And they're finally coming through to fruition, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's always funny. You're an overnight success, and overnight that took 12 years of 80-hour weeks.
Right.
Overnight to you because you just found out about it, you know.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, like, it's like I just see it everywhere now. I'm like, well, I understand there's been 4.5 years
yeah.
of making phone calls and doing conventions and doing trade shows and hiring people and bringing people in to make that happen. So, you know, for me, yeah, I got big dreams I've always wanted, and there's no guarantees. And obviously, mm-hmm. me and my wife and I have probably risked financial ruin, at least, I don't know, a baker's dozen worth of times to do all this, but
right.
Without risk, there's no reward, so.
That's the story of an entrepreneur,
yep.
right? I mean, it's a wild, my parents were both entrepreneurs as well, so that's what I grew up around. Your kids are going to have an incredible experience growing up around two very brave entrepreneurs as well. But it's interesting when you talk about your profit model being so long-term. People talk about overnight success because you see the protein popcorn all over the place doesn't mean it is profitable.
So it's funny you're talking about things that you have to do with small business. And last week, while I was in a convention in Virginia for 3 days, I had to leave the convention and let one of my partners run it for about 2 hours because I got the Zoom, or it was Teams, with Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Me and five other business owners on behalf of the National Federation of Independent Business Owners speaking to Congress on a bill that's being proposed to levelize Amazon, Google, and Meta for fair business practices towards small business.
Yeah.
And I had to tell them a unique story that, oh, you get the popcorn on Amazon, that's so great. Yeah, no. It was 1,200 bags, I think we sold a couple pallets worth in a matter of a few months. People don't realize that we were actually going negative $1 a bag.
Wow.
So other than the freight, the time, the labels, everything else, I'm losing $1. I'm in the red, $1, every bag you bought on Amazon.
Yeah, that's not good.
But it's one of those things because of their particular platform that, you know, to be legitimized in certain people's eyes in society at this point in time, if you're not on Amazon, it must be fake, right?
Right.
So I do it. We did it long enough. I'm like, okay, it's been a couple months. We've done 1,200 bags. We're going to go into fulfillment of our warehouse here in Omaha. The name's out there. We're doing the thing. It was an investment, $1,200 loss. I mean, how many guys out there listening say, I'm going to sell this and just lose $1,200? Well, you would look at me like I'm insane, but I'm understanding it's a multi-step process to legitimate people's eyes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, hey, you just look things up on Amazon. Super easy. The platform's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
So we switched it to ours. And guess how many bags I've sold in the last 9 months?
How many?
One. I didn't change the ad. I didn't change the product. I didn't change the verbiage. I didn't change the name. I didn't change anything.
Right.
And that is showing how unfair Amazon's business practices actually are for a small business. If I see one more post from somebody on Facebook that says Amazon's great for small business, I'll lose my biscuit because they are one of the most atrocious companies for a small business anywhere in the United States,
wow.
bar none. And there are stories after stories after stories we got to hear in front of the Washington, D.C. panel on just how horrible they are.
Yeah.
Intellectual property theft, I mean, all these things. And it's trying to buy your business. Well, small business doesn't have the money to buy the business. And so anyways, it was very interesting, and and people are like looking at, oh, you sold all this and now you're being greedy. Like, no, I should rather at least break even,
yeah.
You know, not lose money.
Right.
How many of you out there want to lose $1,200 in a business deal knowingly that you have to lose it? It's not, it makes a lot of sense. So,
wow.
It's just people understanding how it actually works. I mean, Amazon yeah. takes 35% of the gross of every dollar sold.
Wow.
On, before costs or anything. Anything that's sold on Amazon for every small business. And most businesses aren't making 50% on a lot of items because it's right. a competitive marketplace in the worldwide. So most of them, they make anything, it's less than 5%.
So can we maybe break that down a little bit more? Sure. So you were selling your products, a part of Amazon. And real quick, I think that maybe what you had to say in Washington might have struck a chord, because I did see today that Amazon has pledged $150 million in investments in small businesses over the next so many years.
That's also because they've already spent $150 million in ads in Washington, D.C. fighting this bill.
Oh, yeah.
Telling everyone it's going to ruin Prime. And,
right.
and the thing is, we're making headway. And I'm forgive my name. I'm so bad with names when it comes to politicians. Or so name my name. The one gentleman in Colorado sponsored the bill, and also Chuck Grassley in Iowa sponsoring this bill. And guys, they wouldn't be spending $120 to $150 million in ads fighting it if it wasn't for a purpose. Mm-hmm. And so we help small businesses. So why are so many businesses signed up to speak? And we're talking story after story after story. Simple fact is the advertising user fees on Amazon are up well over 100% in the last 24 months alone.
Wow.
Their income fees off small businesses have almost tripled, because they're publicly traded, they've tripled in less than 2 years.
Right.
So if they were making $60 billion, they're now at $180
billion. Yeah.
I can't remember the exact number from the congressional meeting. But Senator Buck, Colorado, is sponsoring the bill, and that's really what it is. Small business employs 48% of the population of the United States.
Yes.
Of that, over half of that is in a business less than 20 people. You don't realize what a powerful force we are. And the simple fact is that Amazon is scared. Jeff Bezos made this comment a couple years ago as they stepped away from leadership at Amazon. Amazon may not be here in 20. And people are like, no way. I'm like, well, no way.
Yeah.
Understand this. They have a great platform. That's it. That's what they have. They have a great platform, and they're starting to lose their threshold. Mm-hmm. And simple fact is, Amazon doesn't scare me in the fact that they can never match my experience, my customer expertise, my customer service, or anything about my products at all. They're just a third party.
Yeah.
And so once our platform meets theirs, they're done. And they're very well aware of that. Technology is expanding and improving so rapidly, it's only a matter of time before somebody else figures out the same formula. And treat sellers better, and all their products go to that form. And right. we saw with Airbnb, nobody thought Airbnb would ever be even touched. Now there's three massively competitive platforms, and Airbnb is losing their tails. It's
yeah.
the same difference, and that's right. really why they're fighting it, and that's why Amazon, we're going to donate 150. Now, how about you just let us make money on our own products? That's all we want.
Right.
I'm not looking to get paid by Amazon. Let me be competitive.
Yeah.
Same thing with Meta. The same issues Facebook and Instagram is the same exact issues.
Yeah.
Google, same exact issues. They're all doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's too much of it's a monopolistic, if at all. And it's even for us, like, you know, like when I started selling on Amazon, that's when I found out how bad it was.
Right.
Because prior to that, I mean, I got three daughters, bro. You understand how many Amazon packages were showing up at my house?
Nonstop.
And it wasn't until we got on the seller side and realized just how truly bad they are to work with that I think we order maybe 1/10 as many things from Amazon now as we ever did before.
The free market, baby. That's the capital market taking effect.
And the thing is, as I've spoken to senators and I've spoken to Congressman Bacon here, as he did a small business day at our warehouse, actually helped me pack boxes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a huge fan of politicians in general at all.
Yeah.
I worked in Washington, D.C. in and out for 6 years, so it's... Trust me, I don't like it there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing. And he was very nice about it, and a few other politicians on both sides of the aisle. And about six of them, honestly, we had 50,000 people viewing that live.
Yeah.
And now it's over 500,000 at this point, a week later. And it's 50-50, Democrat and Republican. They're all like, they had no idea.
Right.
They literally had no idea. But if you hadn't been in that space, you wouldn't know.
No, but they like their stock appreciation, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Amazon has three representatives and lobbyists in Washington to every single congressman and senator that there is.
It's incredible.
And why would you do that if you weren't literally trying to get away with stuff? So
they are. I mean, they absolutely are. But it's interesting to me that those margins are so different. Can you please maybe explain a little more why you think so? You're still selling it on Amazon, but you removed, you switched to a different.
To our fulfillment instead of out of the Amazon warehouse.
Oh,
it's the
okay.
Only difference.
That's all it is that you're the one shipping the packages
yeah.
Now, and all
so
of a sudden, all,
I'm just paying them to have it on there. That's it.
And yet nobody's buying it.
Nope. Because they're making obviously significantly less because they're not warehousing it, they're not shipping it, they're not packing it, they're not boxing it. So they're making significantly less. I can ship anywhere in the United States from Omaha, Nebraska in 1 to 2 days.
Yeah.
So it won't affect Prime at all. I can be a Prime.
Yeah.
But they aren't allowed to upcharge it that massively. And all of a sudden, so I'm not even appearing in search rankings.
So there's, you think they are, it's a deliberate, you know, move by Amazon to push down.
To force people to have to use their services as an entire encompassing business partner so they can charge you the most amount of money.
Goodness gracious.
And I even had a conversation with the guys, you know, this last year. I'm like, hey, here's the cost. I'll show you. Like, I'm losing $1. They're like, oh, this is our fees. This is
right.
What it is.
They don't care.
Oh, but you can sell it direct. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not changing anything. We go one bag in 9 months.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
And so we actually, this last week, actually deleted the products off of Amazon completely for the first time in 2 or 3 years. And now we're going to try to resubmit, re-go through the process using a third-party company to help us do it. And it's, like I explained to you guys, this is a functional food. There's not a lot of margins in these.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not raising the retail price so you can pad your pockets. I want to make the health snack affordable for everyone with kids, for mom and dad, and for grandma, because that's my mission. When you guys go into a gas station, you go into a grocery store, and you're looking at most of the protein snacks, understand that most of them are terribly unhealthy.
Yeah.
They're not. The only difference between them, the only difference between a Lenny and Larry's cookie and a cookie is protein.
Right.
The rest of it's just as bad. Look at the macros.
Tons of sugar.
And so there's two other protein popcorns in the market. They're really terrible, honestly. They're not even competitors, but they're terribly unhealthy. And so I went to the advantageous position of producing this that met macros for athletes.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can actually have an athlete use it, you know, post-workout, pre-workout, you know, the nacho cheddar and white cheddar flavors have to have fat, so because those particular powders have to stick to the popcorn. So I used organic coconut oil. I used whey hydroisolated, which is the highest grade faster digesting protein in the world. This is what the extreme professional athletes use. I used the highest grade of absolutely everything, no high fructose corn syrup. I did all those things because I know what I am. When I go to a gas station, I know what this stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm traveling, I can't buy anything.
Yeah.
So I did it for the athlete who actually knows, but I also did it for the mom buying for their kids after soccer practice or football practice or volleyball, that they can actually do something the kid wants to eat that is actually going to benefit them. Most of your protein snacks out there use denatured proteins. And people don't know the difference. Like, most of the stuff you're going to buy at Walmart or Costco is considered a denatured protein. Now, are they lying? No. It's protein. The problem is it's bottom of the barrel denatured, which means it's already been destroyed by heat, which means your body is, there's no chance it's ever going to digest that protein, add it to its enzymes, and get it to your bloodstream in time to ever repair a single ounce of muscle tissue ever.
Mm-hmm.
So it will not absolutely do nothing ever for your muscle tissue. So you think you're doing something healthy for your muscles. You're not.
Right.
It's making you feel better mentally, but it's not. And then two, denatured proteins cause gastrointestinal discomfort. It causes gas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have protein, tears my stomach up. I'm it must be, like, no, but you're using denatured protein. It's bottom of the barrel stuff. And so I wanted something that, you know, is non-GMO, that's gluten-free, that's lactose-free, that's got literally everything. So my mom, and I won't say her age, because she'll kill me, she can eat it. And then my 10-year-old can eat it after football practice. And then my 3-year-old can eat it because he won't eat anything with protein. You got kids, you get this.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nightmare. So I had to find a way to trick kids into eating protein. Because the little 3-year-old, he won't eat anything with protein. The only thing he eats with protein is protein popcorn.
Right.
It's the only thing I can get that kid to go to, you know, to do it. I'm not going to fight him. He's the youngest of 6. I'm tired and I'm old.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that was kind of the whole mission. How we got off on that subject. But, you know.
No, that's great.
And, you know, we've had this happen with our competitors. This is why we've been successful at Rexius and the nutrition stores and in the brand, because, you know, Walmart, Walgreens, Target, GNC, CVS, and the state of New York in 2015, 2016, you had to pull every bottle off every single shelf in the entire state because not a single bottle they were selling met label claims.
Right.
And the New York Attorney General went after them. Now, I'm not usually a big fan of the in the New York political system. I was like, good for you.
Yeah.
Every bottle they were importing in those stores came from China. None of those were actually FDA registered GMP certified facilities, and they were all falsified.
Right.
Amazon last year, 27 out of 27 health products bought on Amazon were either 100% fake, made pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah.
Because all Amazon is, again, is a third-party seller.
Right.
You don't know if this jug of, you know, this pre-workout is actually coming from the guy who makes that jug. Somebody can fake that,
right,
and mix some stuff in their garage and throw it on Amazon. You don't know.
Yeah, there's no regulation there.
There's no. And so that's something else with the Amazon regulation, is that the manufacturer should be able to decide who's allowed to sell their product. They're allowed to control their pricing structure, and Amazon doesn't honor any of this. Every other website in the United States is mandated, except for Facebook, Instagram, Google, their own shop, and Amazon. Mm-hmm. Those are the four that are allowed.
Yeah, I mean, the S&P 500 relies very heavily on those stocks to do well. That's for sure. And so, I know that's not the end-all, be-all at the end of the day, but a lot of people are very invested in these guys. Keep on pushing your earnings up, keep on outperforming, find ways to make more and more money quarter after quarter. From that point of view, you know, you have businesses that are all obviously not publicly traded. These are all, you own at least a portion of them, if not all of them yourself. You have business partners. It's all private held companies. What do you think is the importance of that in the business communities? Because we're seeing now, I like B Corps, for instance, the Benefit Corp, something that now, I think Patagonia just came on as being a B Corp and whatnot, where instead of them saying we are going to maximize our profit for shareholders, we're going to maximize our ability to help this cause. You know, theirs is going to be obviously climate change, whatever they're most passionate about.
Yeah.
What do you think about, will there ever be kind of a shift in the business models in the U.S.? Do you think it's always going to be like this?
Oh, no, there'd be massive shifts. The real fact is we've printed so many trillions of dollars and there's so much money still stuck in the crypto market that's not even being accounted for in the United States stock market. If that ever actually happens, we're going to have a crash in that proportion you've never seen.
Yeah.
And these companies built on false premises and what I call bad legs will fall. 100% they'll fall. And I don't know why we seem to think to repeat the same things from the past and expect a different result. But we're able to manipulate the market with currency dumping more now than we ever have in the past, because we live in a 24/7 global economy. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing the C corporation models, especially in a lot of industries. I mean, look at a lot of the titans that were in the 1990s. Most of them don't exist.
Right.
Because they did the same thing. When you're in a C-class corporation for profit and publicly traded, there is no long-profit model. It is all, very few. Buffett, that's a long-profit model.
Yeah.
He's one of the rare breeds in that actual aspect.
For sure.
Most of them are short. It's just this quarter. It's just, what can I do this quarter to cut losses and maximize profits for the quarterly share representation to affect the stock market? Which means if you're doing that four times a year, you're never looking at 4 or 5 years down the road. It's very, very rare. Mm-hmm. And then there's enough stupid money that they think the fix to that is, oh, we're going to consolidate. We're going to buy another brand. This is going to be the thing. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't take very long, especially in today's technology and society, the new brand, especially with the communication that allows us to communicate globally via the internet, where a brand can overtake another brand in a matter of, I mean, a year.
Right.
I mean, look at Redbox and Blockbuster.
Yeah.
That's my favorite story ever.
Sure.
Blockbuster offered to buy Redbox, and it was some measly amount of money. I can't remember. I spoke to the gentleman and actually heard him on a podcast as a guest tonight, but it was, like, they wanted $25 million, and Blockbuster laughed him out of the room. And a year later, Redbox bought Blockbuster for $25 million instead of the $250. It was exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
It's happened. It's no difference than when Facebook bought Instagram for, was it 50?
Yeah, they bought it for $1 billion.
They bought it for $5 million is what it was.
Oh, okay.
And then Gary Vaynerchuk said they stole it. They laughed him off of CNBC, and the next year's valuation was $500.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And so that's the whole point. And we're in a super speed society. It's on fast forward right now. So, and so the small businesses who are not publicly traded, we're looking at long profit. We can't just go raise stock. We can't just, do a stock offering and create more shares. And that's the days of society right now where you have, money gatherings and you're doing upstarts and you're doing different things where basically people are really good at collecting money but not actually operating. Mm-hmm. And I see it changing quite exponentially because people are being smarter with it. There's, you know, we're in a recession. Anybody tells you different is not aware. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals of the industry is going to continuously, the industry is going to go up. World supply and demand chain is finally starting to catch up to a certain degree. You got oil topping over $100 a barrel again. That happened pretty much overnight, didn't it?
Yep.
And the simple fact is the economy itself is 18 months behind is what you're actually seeing on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to continue for at least another 18 to 24 months. And so let's put it this way. So everybody understands, I've been offered to go public 3 times though. Mm-hmm. It's a specialty service. There's not a lot of people that can do that. You know, in Nebraska, I met with a gentleman, Brittany, I met with him 3 times, very well-spoken. He's from Spain. And understand right now, if I go public, I combine, if I consolidated all 4 of my companies into one, which is what we would do, which would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I got membership growth. I've got asset based. I've got wholesale business, direct to consumer. I've got retail locations. I've got one hell of a company that could go public. And I've even spoke to my partners about this. Each company, different percentages, went through the work with lots of accounting and breaking down what ownership would look like, valuations and everything. Brittany and I would stand to make probably $30 million in the first day.
Right.
Now, understand, I do not have $1 million in the bank anywhere. If anyone's under that interpretation, you're wrong.
Right.
We would be worth pretty much $30 million almost instantly.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that for a reason. No one, not like I don't want money, because I do. But these guys went through it all. Like, that's what it would be worth. Even if we traded just on the Nebraska stock market, we would be worth millions. We have products here that have, you know, $100 million to $500 million future valuations, like the Botboard. It's got $100 million to $500 million buyout value,
right?
Which is what it will be. I've already been offered numbers of a significant amount more than we even sell to buy that brand, and it's a no. Why would I sell it to you for $10 million now when a year it's worth $100 million and in 3 it's worth $250 million?
Yeah,
I'm well aware of how that works.
Yeah,
because of that particular market, because of what's been bought out the last 5 years, I really know where it's at. It's part of me doing my homework. Now, it's about having a long profit model. Me caring about my employees. I didn't want to have to satisfy shareholders for a short-term profit that would go against our values of the company. You don't build legacy that way. It doesn't happen, and we've seen it too many times. In an industry where people make bad decisions for money that lead to them actually making less money 5 years down the road. It's the same thing I see in the supplement and health industry. Show me one company that went to Walmart's happy 5 years later. Because mm-hmm. there isn't one.
Right.
Wait, but Walmart, yeah. No, they're not. Every one of those CEOs gets canned within 24 months. Literally, the company gets bought out. The only reason you go to Walmart is you're trying to sell it to a huge, bigger company. That is the only reason in my industry. We had another brand right now. I had a conversation with a gentleman out of Arizona who does a lot of international trade 2 days ago, and he said the same thing. Well, this brand Rise went to Walmart. Cool. They'll be done in 24.
Yeah.
I've been around this too long. He's like, well, I go, show me one company. He's been around this industry for 15 years too. I said, show me one company that went to Walmart is still in existence even 3 years later.
Yeah.
He's got nothing. None of them are.
Yeah.
It's this chasing the big dollars for the Amazons, the Walmarts, and the Costcos that destroy companies. They have no longevity. So if you want a quick check, you can go public and trade that thing off. You can sell out to a big company like Amazon or Walmart, but then you're done. The simple fact is, bro, I don't know what else I'm going to do with my life.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do, go get a real job? No. Yeah. I don't do time off. I mean, you know me. I work 80 hours a week because I like it.
Yeah.
What else would I do with my time? It's the gentleman who you should have on your podcast, Bob Haney, owns Heavenly Waffles.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's a chef. And the gentleman who originally owned another company already offered him $20 million for the company. And he goes, no. He's based out of Omaha.
Yeah.
He's in like 15 or 16 NCAA tables, including the Huskers. He's in like 5 or 6 NFL teams.
Nice.
They offered him $20 million or something. He goes, no. He goes, good, because I would have turned around and sold it for another 6 months for $250.
Right.
The guy was honest with him.
Yeah.
Understanding what you have. And Bob said the same thing. This is why I like Bob. He goes, what else am I going to do?
Sure.
I like making waffles.
Yeah.
So it's all about life satisfaction too. I'm very happy where I'm at, and I don't need diamond encrusted countertops, and I don't need vacation homes, because the fact is I wouldn't have the time to go to them anyways.
Right.
I have 6 kids spanning between 23 and 3.
Yeah.
I'm here, you know what I mean? And so I think that's the best thing about small business is stability for your local economy.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Right.
I mean, if you build your entire local economy on the basis of how many Amazon warehouses you have. What happens when they shut down?
No doubt.
You're screwed. Your entire town becomes a ghost town. We've seen it happen in smaller communities in Nebraska here alone that I grew up in, that you had IBP, and then Tyson Foods bought out IBP, and they closed the plant, and all of a sudden that town loses 30% of its population. Mm-hmm. And for 20 years it's been struggling to figure out what to even do with abandoned neighborhoods.
Sure. Look at Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness, you put all your eggs in one basket, and as soon as that basket empties out, someone comes along, a disruptor in the industry, it's over for you.
The strongest thing you can do for your local economy is have a diverse small business economy, because you're going to put your hands into, because we live here. We're investing here. We buy homes here. You know,
pay taxes.
We pay taxes here. Our kids go to school here. We do all those things. And so having a diverse economy locally based in small business, like, we're employing half the population, guys. Mm-hmm. So the fact is, I got a little argument with a guy there, because Amazon's good. They're not. He goes, well, they're building warehouses. Cool. Do you want to work in a warehouse? Well, no. So yeah. Why are you deciding that, because Amazon's building, you know, 20 new warehouses in your area, that the warehouse good job is a great job for everyone else but you?
Right.
I don't want to work in a warehouse, do you?
No.
No, so I don't really care what Amazon's doing. I care about what the guy down the street, the barber down the street, and what they're doing. And how. Because, so the fact is, I'm the one going speaking at local high schools and local universities. I'm the one donating to your kids' little league team. Mm-hmm. I'm the one donating to your aunt's GoFundMe, you know, for her cancer treatments.
Right.
Not Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
It's not Amazon, guys. Like, simple fact is, small businesses enrich your communities so much significantly more than any of these huge conglomerates who really don't give a you or your town.
Right. Language. It's all right. It's okay. You know, it's a passionate subject, and honestly, you're very invested in it. Let's talk a little bit about employees, because obviously, here is where, you know, you as an employer are getting beat out by the Amazons, is why. Well, healthcare costs in this country are so insane. It's almost impossible for a small business to truly, they can go in and Washington and legislate that you have to provide healthcare. Wow, that's convenient for everybody who doesn't have to pay the bill and you don't understand the industry.
Oh, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's too much. Retirement plans are something that, of course, are an expensive product. They're when you're in the trenches, like you are in your businesses, you're talking about 4 years working on this protein popcorn. Obviously, you're working towards becoming a profitable model, but maybe you're not there yet. Mm-hmm. You know, you still need to employ people. You still need to have some kind of competitive edge. What do you believe, you know, what is it that small businesses and Rexius in particular has an advantage of? Why should I come and work for you instead of working for Amazon?
Well, and I'm glad you asked that question. And so this is for the other small businesses out there. It's like, you have to get educated on what options are available to you. And a lot of these tax codes, and we have a very, very, very complicated tax code, but do your homework and do your research. The same advantages that Amazon uses, these other ones, you can use too. You just have to tailor them for your needs. And so it's been a major shift for Brittany and I. Let's go with the retail stores to start with, because each one's had its own little heyday, right? Mm-hmm. So Rexius, I mean, the goal was for me to have as many stores of my own as possible and franchise, right? Because it's a good revenue base. Mm-hmm. The problem is this talent. That I pour a lot of time and energy into the staff and teaching them and training them, making them better business people overall. I want a smart, energetic, well-educated person behind the counter representing my brand, because at the end of the day, that relationship is what determines whether or not I'm successful, is the guy or gal behind the counter. Mm-hmm. The problem was, I trained them so well, they kept leaving.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them, they just leave to go start their own franchise. It's awesome. But then I'm stuck redoing the same process at the locations that I own.
Yeah.
So about 3 years ago, Brittany and I had a little switch, because I am trying to work on like three different fronts, and it can be quite exhausting. And I'm like, you know, I have this, straight up, I had a manager up in Norfolk. It's the second store I ever opened. I opened it in 2011 in May. And Josh had worked for me for 3.5 years. And Josh and I were friends way back in the day. And he called me one day. He goes, am I stupid for not buying this from you? I go, yes.
Yeah.
He goes, would you really sell it to me? Yes. Because he is the reason it's successful. And I've got a lot of managers, and I have bad ones, and I have good ones. And I just don't want to go through the bad ones. Because when somebody has a really bad experience in a business, it takes forever to get them back, if you do at all.
Right.
You know, people will write 9,000 negative reviews for McDonald's, but they still go there. A small business, it's detrimental. It's devastating. It's a knife to the heart, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, you should own it. He has roots in that town. He has planted roots. He has a house. He's got three kids. He's got two in the school district. And being a retail owner is actually a pretty good flexible life compared for retail hours for being a family man or a family woman. Mm-hmm. So he bought it. And after already running for 3.5 years, the thing I found out was that it was crazy. He broke every sales record he'd already produced within 6 months. Wow. Because people like to support an owner because he's the guy in charge. You know when you walk in, you've got an owner because they know and they care. They're seeing, they want you coming back 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, and 6 years because that puts food on the table for their kids as they grow. So there's that care and attention. Now, I make significantly less money because I'm not owning the store, but it's a long profit model. I'm making a very low royalty for the next 20 or 30 years from a guy and a gal and a husband and wife and kids who are very happy with the business they're running. They're representing me very well.
Yeah.
So we made a switch. We went from 11 locations, we're down to 4.
Right, that you own.
That I own, and I'm actually selling 2 more.
Okay.
Carney, the guys are trying to buy it right now, and we're definitely entertaining selling the Exarban Village store at some point in time.
Wow, Exarban, that would be...
It's a really well-built store, it's a great area, but I kind of want to get down to the main two, 120th and Center, 108th and Maple, that my first OGs, and you know, I just run those, because we still need to have our own stores to run the corporation and the warehouse.
Yeah.
But I've had so much fun. I sold Bellevue, Council Bluffs, Sioux City, I've sold all these stores, and they all went and did the same thing, they all broke every record I had.
That's awesome.
And seeing them successful, it allows me to do other things and build the brand, do the speaking engagements, you know, do the videography and do the podcasting and things that build the brand overall. We got to think we're open in Hot Springs, Arkansas. We're up in Minneapolis. We're opening in Tempe, Arizona in 6 weeks.
Wow.
These guys need me there for events and do this and helping build the brand that people buy. I can't do that from running shops.
No, can't be answering those phone calls and whatnot.
And so basically turning store managers and owners.
Yeah.
And so it's me giving up profit for a short-term profit, a lot of it, for a long-term profit model, and just making sure that I can get my funds in other ways, so I diversified in several industries.
Yeah.
The gyms, we took advantage of, you know, some of the Section 179 and 109A tax codes, which they're thinking about getting rid of, which is foolish. Mm-hmm. But it allows us to use the accelerated depreciation model to our advantage. And so, being that we had other sources of income from both sides, we're able to... You know, depending on where our taxes are at individually, to save us money. So if we, you know, say we buy $200,000 of equipment, we have to put $40,000 down, right? You know, 20% down.
Right.
And I don't need a lot of write-offs. We use that 6 to 7 year schedule write-off, maybe, you know, 25 or 50% year one, and depreciate the next half or 75% of the next 6 years. Mm-hmm. But let's say I had a lot of income in one business, and you know, I have to put on this $20,000 on the gym, and I'm going to pay the IRS another $25,000. What I could do is take that $200,000 investment in equipment and write it off 1 year, which should make allows me to show an appreciable loss of $200,000 on the taxes that year, which allows me to get the entire down payment back.
Right.
Which allows me to, which for a small family business is a huge amount of money to not have to sit out of your bank account wait years to make your money back. Especially membership-based businesses. It takes a while to get in the black.
Yeah.
So those tax codes allow us to be able to do certain things and maximize our out-of-pocket cost and returns back with the IRS tax code the way it is. So it's about small business owners understanding the same thing that Amazon is doing right now. Building these warehouses and showing no profit. The reason they're doing that is because of these tax code options. The same options are available to you.
Right.
You just need to understand them. They do not expect your local guy who does your taxes to know that. You need to get on the Small Business Association website. You need to get into the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business Owners, and start talking to the guys and the gals in the room who've already done this. And that's what I did. Simple fact is let's say you're in business for 5 or 10 years. You're in the 5 or 10 years. You should strive to want to be in the 40-year group. The mm-hmm. guys and gals have been doing it for 40 years.
Right.
Well, these organizations, your local chamber of commerce, all these networking groups, allow you the chance to talk to people in the 40-year room.
Right.
And trust me, if they're there for 20, 30, or 40 years, they know a thing or two.
Right.
And just like me, when I do these podcasts, I love to talk about it because it's my passion. It's what I built my life around. And so really, my hat's off to all these guys, the NFIB and the Chamber of Commerce and Centers for Networking Groups and the SBA just giving out information for free. That's the same thing. Well, this is how this works, and this is how that works. It's educating myself. And then VHI, for instance, which is it's a wholesale brand. We have some direct-to-consumer website stuff, too. But I don't have the budget that a lot of these guys in the nutrition and health industry, they used to buy their business.
Right.
They're selling out to the sharks on Shark Tank, and they don't realize how much they're giving out for that. It isn't just what the offer you see. Shark Tank takes a permanent percentage of your profit for life.
Right.
And
yeah.
Everybody else asks why I haven't gone on there yet. That's why.
Yeah.
And so what they're doing is not only buying the inventory, they're buying the marketing, they're buying the influencers, they're buying those things to make you do it. And because they have that money to leverage and lose. I had enough money to put $500,000 into inventory. I didn't have another $500,000 to ask Kylie Jenner to tell everybody, this tastes so great. I don't have that budget. So what I need is staff who's willing to build it from the ground up. And you know, their talents and their experiences and their skills. And so what, and it really was a conversation. I know you made this much, but I can only pay you this much. And I'm sorry, but what I can do is I can give you a profits interest. And so allows a few of my guys who are very talented, who could go take jobs other places and make more money. You know, JD and Brad could definitely go make more money other places than working for me.
Right.
But it allows them to have an ownership share. And they earn that share by results. And they have 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%. Now you may ask, like, well, that's not that much. Yeah, but if I sell that popcorn for $100 million in 2 years.
5% sounds pretty good.
5% sounds real good without them having to put any money in it.
Right.
They also don't get any tax penalties for that. Yeah. And I don't get any tax penalties for that.
That's great.
So it's actually, there's different ways of using, you know, some of the 6 year, you know, pushback appreciation, those kind of things. There's a lot of different tax things you can do.
Yeah.
But it allows them to get in on a startup, the one that's physical. And the thing is, it's not my only thing. So I'm diversified. They know I have Rexy's. They know I have Iron Heaven Gyms too. That I need this to work. Don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, I've got the time and the money invested into it. That it's stable. I have the infrastructure already in place. So it's a safe company to come start up in.
Yeah.
And so people think startups are scary. Yes, they are, because there's no guarantee that you're going to be successful. But the upside is massive. It's a risk versus reward scenario. Now, I'm taking the majority of the risk because I'm actually putting the money out.
Right.
But they're also taking a risk because they're not earning the money that they could.
Yeah.
Right now, but allows them to make a living they can possibly dream of if we hit that mountaintop. And
right.
So that's what allowed me to compete with the benefit structures and the retirement accounts and all those kind of things. It's like, I can't do all that stuff for you.
Right.
What I can do is give you a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Rexy's managers, they got a piece of the pie. They got their own shop.
Right.
And they got it for cost, mostly. They was way below what the blue market value was because I knew what they could afford to get. Mm-hmm. But I wanted them there. I wanted them caring. I wanted them getting a piece of the pie because now I've locked in talent for life.
Right.
So now I've given them something that Amazon is going to give you a piece of the pie.
No.
No.
And they're incentivized to do well.
Yeah.
Because obviously, the more the company grows, the more their share of ownership will grow.
Well, and then it also shows how much belief I have in them.
Right.
Like, I'm making you a partner. And
yeah.
You can ask them, you can ask Brad, you can ask JD, you can ask Nate. I don't say you're a junior shareholder. I don't say you're a minority. Like I said, you put on their co-owner.
Right.
Put that on your business card. You ever seen the look on somebody's face? I tell you right now, for me, it's like the greatest high that I get is seeing these guys get that first new business card that says co-owner.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a Knights of the Round Table type situation.
Mm-hmm.
When we had meetings, yeah, a lot of the decisions come down to me on a multitude of the companies, but at the end of the day, like, these guys have some buildings too.
Yeah.
And it shows the belief I have in them, and you get that relationship that, you know, because I've been a number on a page in a company before, and it sucks.
Oh, it's horrible.
And it's just not for me. Now, nothing wrong with people where that's okay with them. They want to work their 9 to 5, have their weekends and nights and holidays off, and live. That's safe. That's nothing wrong with it. Good people do that.
Yeah.
It's just not me.
Right.
And a lot of these guys are looking for an opportunity to have a say. They want to have a legacy for their kids and their grandkids too. And you're not going to do that by being a number on the page.
Right.
I mean, it's what they say. You ever seen the movie Troy? All right. That's why no one will remember your name.
Right.
That is a saying that I say. It's in my notes every single day. Will they remember your name?
Yeah, sure.
You're not going to do that by being a number on a page of one of 25,000 employees. It's probably not going to happen.
Right.
But you're in the beginning ownership of a company that can redefine a certain industry. People will remember your name.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you want to live that life that other people dream about, then for a while you have to live a life that most people wouldn't do.
Mm.
And that's kind of what we're in. You know, Dave Ramsey used to say that I live like no one else is willing to now, so later I can live like no one else can.
Right.
And that is the mantra of my life, and has been for the majority of my adulthood. And my wife said, too, I make a terrible employee. I'm entirely too argumentative.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do it.
Might be a little tough, but you'd have to be, you probably do well in the oil field. They kind of like a little bit of spice.
Pretty well. Like I said, I told him before the podcast started, I go, my other thing is going to be, I was going to be the radio announcer guy, you know.
Right.
The voice of the Huskers or something like that.
Exactly.
I still want to do that. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the next side hustle. That's the retirement gig. You'll be starting your speaking career.
Instead of a greeter at Walmart, I'm the voice of the Huskers.
Yeah, perfect. So.
That'd be hard not to swear, especially with me.
Yeah. But, oh, no, Huskers are doing great. What do you mean? but, you know, what I like that you said is you're taking, you acknowledge the fact of what your employees are giving up in order to be a part of this company. You know, you aren't, it's not that I hear it everywhere, but I do hear it from some people, and especially small business owners. I understand you are taking a lot of risk. You're working your butt off. You put in tons of hours, and I hear some people really, like, discount the amount of risk they're, oh, but my employees, they don't work nearly as hard, don't do nearly as much. It's like, well, they probably shouldn't, bud. They probably shouldn't, no, because you're the one, your name is on the building. You're going to have to hustle harder than them, but at the same time, you're giving them that opportunity. It's like, hey, if you want to hustle hard, if you want to have the next step in this company, which is ownership, there's an avenue for you. Yep. It might not be the 401k with the, whatever, 15% match, if that, you know, exists in like 0.1% of all 401ks anymore. But at the same time, you know, you are hiring the right people. Those types of people will gravitate towards you. Eventually, you had to go through some bad ones, but eventually you fish them out, and then your employees are so much stronger because of it, right?
And that's just it. And the thing is that, you know, as a business owner, you can never expect paid employees to ever care as much as you do, nor should they.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's an arrogant position to be in, and it's something I had to learn. You know, that I'm like, why don't these guys? Well, because they're not in my seat.
Right.
And so when I find and identify that 1 out of 20 that has that talent, and I cultivate it,
yeah,
I work on it, I teach it, I invest into them in time. And it's funny, like, even if they don't stay with me, who knows what position they'll be in 2 years to help me do something.
Yeah.
And that's happened before, where I've had guys leave, come back, like, hey, I'm a franchise a shop, can I do that? Yeah. And then they're helping me branch out in a new area of the country that didn't exist, or hey, I buy at this shop, I told them they need to pick up your brand. All of a sudden, I got a whole new wholesale streamline because I've spent the time investing into people. And people are the only asset that matters. At the same point in time, I'm also very honest with all of them. I'm like, guys, here's how the economy works, and here's why I can pay you when I can pay you.
Right.
And that usually, this conversation usually happens with just that wannabe full-time employee who doesn't really have the chance for ownership or doesn't want it. And like, okay, guys, let me explain how macro microeconomics works. Most people really don't understand. So you got to, from a CEO standpoint, you got to be an educator, and you got to pour some time in and say, okay, like, and get down on their level,
and
how they learn.
Yeah.
And some guys, it literally is me getting out a pen and a pad and a paper, and that sounds, it's not derogatory by any means, it's just me drawing it out almost like in a planogram so they can see how it works. Like, okay, you know how your rent went up? Yeah, it sucks. You know why? Because real estate taxes went up. My house, well, yeah. Okay, you know why I pay businesses? I pay real estate taxes.
Right.
So when the economy and all of a sudden things happen after COVID, and real estate property values go through the roof because of shortage of supplies and materials and housing, every single retail store, I had to pay my pro rata share. Right? Okay, cool. And then you saw how the supply and demand chain got jacked around. I mean, creatine went up 250%, caffeine 200%, sucralose 600%, whey protein 90%.
Wow.
And you guys only saw my prices increase 10%.
Right.
I have to base my retail price on A, what I know my customers can afford, and B, whatever Amazon's selling it for. I can't be more expensive.
Yeah.
Not today's marketplace. So all of a sudden, costs have gone up exponentially, but prices have only gone up 10%.
Yeah.
So where do you think that money went? Well, where'd it go? Out of my pocket.
Right.
So you want increased pay because you see everyone at Chick-fil-A making $17 an hour. I get that. Those are publicly traded corporations that have the ability to do so because they're literally trying to put a stranglehold on a small business. Because we as a small business community are what fight these huge conglomerates to make sure people get benefits.
Right.
That's why they're okay with the health insurances.
Yeah.
The simple fact is they knew that they could increase that cost for a while significantly longer than small businesses can afford to, and they could choke a lot of us out because we're the biggest barrier to them taking over everything is small business.
Right.
And so to give you an idea, I have a family of six. Now, I only get charged for the first three kids, not the last three. It's like their benefit.
Yeah.
The smallest increase I've had since 2010 has been 11%.
In your healthcare costs?
Every year.
Yeah.
It's right. 11 to 18% every year.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, like, when I had a family, we had five people on health insurance in 2010, 2011, it cost me about $500 a month, which still wasn't cheap for me then.
No.
And I think I had a $5,000 deductible.
Right.
And then an HSA deductible, I think it was like $8,000. I even lowered the price a little bit.
Yeah.
I now have a $13,000 deductible per person, 20,000 max per family, HSA for a family of six. and my monthly premium is $2,700.
Holy cow.
Welcome to small business, folks.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know the solution there. I have ideas.
Yeah.
But those small businesses, like, we're taking it in the short. So when I tell these guys, like, listen, I'm paying for what I used to pay for my family at five, I now pay for one individual's health insurance who's single under the age of 40. That's yeah. how much it's exponential. And the health insurance folks, I talk to them, they can't explain it either.
No, no one knows. I mean,
and it's at a point now where I simply can't afford it, which forces you to do what as an employee who needs really good coverage. You have to go to one of these big companies. No, you can't choice. Work for a small business. You have to deal with the boss you hate. They can fire you, not care, not even notice you're gone the next day. With a small business, you're valued, you're appreciated, you're part of the family.
Right.
And that's what I'm finding out from my employees who've gone back and forth, and I always talk, okay, what'd you learn there? What'd you learn at these other companies versus mine? They're like, I could have been fired at any point, and nobody would have noticed they didn't show up.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they had to do, there's no argument, they don't get a voice, they don't get any say in anything, they're just a worker bee. And those bosses know that you really don't have another option.
Yeah.
And so that's where the small business advantage is you're appreciated. You get to have a say, you get to build something. And hopefully, you know, small business owners are out there and you've never thought about, well, I can't give up any percentage. And like, there's a lot of different models and avenues and vehicles you can use between profits that you share, stock restrictions, all sorts of things. So class B level stocks, such employees have a piece of understanding the long term success of the business. And now you have an invested partner who gives as much of a hoot as you do.
Yeah.
And that's huge.
Yeah.
Because going back to the hear from small business owners all the time, I can't be everywhere at once. Cool. Multiply yourself then.
Right.
Multiply the ownership.
Yeah.
And see what happens. If you were able to build three locations on your own, imagine if you had two more people.
Right.
Caring just as much as you did. Yeah. That you trust, that you've invested time into. You don't have to worry about leaving you high and dry because they're an owner too. And you just have to look at it from different avenues. People are worried about what they're losing. They're not thinking about what they can gain.
Right. And it is, you know, it's important. I think it's a wonderful model you have set up. It's very unique, I believe, compared to what I've seen other small businesses do. But when it comes down to those costs, like healthcare, retirement plans, whatnot, you know, I do believe that from what you've told me, you are making that up. You are making up for that with yeah. the ownership possibility. Now, you only have a certain type of employee that that is going to be willing to come and work with you and your companies, yeah. but that's by design,
oh, yeah.
right? And you should have that. The Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, I worked at McDonald's for 3 years. I was in high school. I managed it before I left.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm a manager of McDonald's at 17 years old, what does that say about the quality of employee that they go through and run through, right? And I was good enough to be a manager when I was 17. So it is just churn and burn. Get them in now. They might be paying $20 an hour, but it's with the understanding that you're probably not going to be here 6 months from now, and we're just going to keep it rolling through. And the small businesses, now you're creating what has the potential to be a generational plan, you know, for your businesses. And with six kids, there's a lot of...
Well, that's just it. You know, I want legacy. Yeah. More than anything, I think that's what it is. And it's... You know, I always have another expression in my notes I see every morning. It's like, have you impacted the world like Jeff Bezos or like Steve Jobs did?
Right.
Now, Steve Jobs wasn't well liked by a lot of people he worked with.
Sure.
Look how he's impacted society.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of change have you made? I mean, change the technology, what we do, it's such a different bar. Yeah. And I'm not saying I want to model after the way he behaved, but I say model after his vision and creativity, creating something new from scratch. And that for me has always been kind of my creative side.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want these guys and gals that work for me to have a piece of that, because I had to work my tail off for years to put myself in a position to start a business, because the education I got in college honestly was subpar at best.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to raise funds. I didn't know how to get a loan other than mom and dad co-signed. Okay, well, cool. But they said no. So
right, yeah.
I didn't work. And it was a great experience. And I had a CEO that poured a lot of time into me and really taught me a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I've dedicated my time to helping other people become small business owners, the guys and gals who want to really, you know, invest into their life and who know how to work hard and know what it's like to be hungry.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something that and that's where social media drives me nuts. All these business owners, this and that, and these millionaires, and all this hoopla and all this rhetoric. I'm like, okay, guys, here's some facts for you. 79% of millionaires in the United States inherited $0.
Yeah.
Another 5% inherited a minimal amount between $1,500 and $5,000. Another 5% did inherit a significant amount between $100,000 and $250,000. But all 89% of that group didn't inherit a single penny until they already became millionaires on their own. Right. So understand that 89% of millionaires in the United States created millionaire status on their own without any money from anyone else.
Yeah.
So, and all of a sudden you start telling kids this, and they all of a sudden you can start to see their eyes open. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. I can do what I want to do. It's a lot of work, but I can get there. Unless you're using the words, I want to be an influencer, because then we have a different conversation. But
yeah.
Even with those, I had a kid, I do a lot of mentoring, a young gentleman up here yesterday. For about 2 hours, he wanted to meet with me. I said, I make cut my time out when I can. And I said, the influencer game has changed. No one's going to pay you to just sit here because you're popular on Instagram. We want results.
Yeah.
The offers, even the big names, the Jenners, you know, and all those, they're not getting paid one fifth what they got 5 years ago.
Right.
So the fact is, okay, cool. All I'll do is I'll cut you in on the profit.
Yeah.
You produce results, you get paid. But in the whole just getting paid because you think your popular days are over with.
Yeah.
That's a question I get from a lot of small business owners. I'm the president of the Chamber of Commerce for the city of Ralston, and so I got roped into this last year. It's been kind of fun, honestly.
Sure.
But I get this asked, like, how do you do this? I'm like, listen, I pay for results. I pay handsomely for results. But then there's no risk. Yeah. I'm not going to pay you because you have 100,000 followers, because I don't know if you bought them or not. I don't know if they're legit. I don't know if people are following you because of the way you look or because of the things you have to say.
Right.
So here's what I'll do. I'll give you 10% or 12% of whatever gross revenue you bring into me.
Right.
All said, cool. Now I've got an employee. I don't even have to pay.
Yeah.
Until they produce results. And they're doing it as a side hustle with that little device they have that's got the phone, that's got access to people 24/7, 365. There are ways for small business people to utilize the same thing they see Coke and Pepsi and Nike do, but just from a different avenue.
Nice.
You just got to get creative with it.
And
I think in micro-influencing in business is massive. I don't really care for a lot of the super famous people, to be honest with you. Maybe it's because I'm old and I'm stuck in my ways.
But I'm with you there. As I get older, I could care less and less.
But let's say, like, you've got 20 friends that you know well, that train in the gym, that use supplements, cool.
Yeah.
So instead of me paying ads to Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook, I'm going to give you a profits interest to go out and promote my brand.
Yeah.
And if your friends buy $500 of the stuff, I'm going to give you $50. And if they don't, well, I'm not anything near you.
Right.
You don't feel pressured.
Right.
Because you only get paid your results. You don't get results, and I have to pay you. So I don't feel like we and I have to even have a negative conversation about it.
Yeah.
You know, give it a shot. Don't give it a shot. It's amazing about people who come to me, I can do this. And then they can't.
Yeah.
And then I have a girl in Plattsmouth who has, I have less than half follower than I do. She produces a ton.
Yeah.
Because everybody who follows her believes in her, likes her, and they'll do whatever she says.
Crazy.
And utilize that to your advantage. Now she's got a second source of income. Is it a lot? No. But if it's a couple $100 a month to pay the light bill, well, hey, that's a couple hundred extra bucks a month for fun.
Yeah, so that's only from you. She could leverage that across multiple companies.
Exactly.
Now a new business has been formed. She didn't even know it, right? Out of nowhere.
Well, and this honestly allows me, with the ethics portion of it, to stick with people that really embody what my brand means.
Yeah.
And that to me is everything. And I've always said the same thing when it comes to sponsored athletes. It drives me nuts. I don't care if you won.
Right.
I don't care if you got last, to be honest with you. I care more about the way you conduct yourself in society. Did you hold the door open for the old lady who walked into the show?
Mm-hmm.
Were you nice to the competitors around you? Did you say please and thank you?
Yeah.
Were you respectful to my wife when you came in the store? Are you respectful to my staff? Or do you act like you're above everyone else and levitating on a different level?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care if you got first. I don't care if you got last. I care about the way you conduct yourself.
Yeah.
Because the way you conduct yourself reflects upon my ethics, my morals, my values, and my brand.
Yeah.
That means more than anything. And I think that's a big switch a lot of people have made over the last 3 years when it comes to marketing with your businesses, because they realize, like, well, I've got this really famous football star who's got, you know, 7 million followers going to promote my product until he gets caught beating his wife.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So align with people who ethically match with you more than the people who align with what you think they can possibly do for you.
Yeah.
Long profit model is the way for success over short term profit.
I love it. And I know we're kind of bumping up against our time here. So I think my last question to you, now here we are, this is 2022. You started your business over 12 years ago, right? So you've been around a long time, you've been able to see some things happen. Like you mentioned, very likely that we're in a recession. I've been saying it for a while. But of course, I think that now people are catching up to it, depending on who you speak to. But whether or not the country is in a recession, small businesses will probably be the first ones to feel a little bit of pressure, people not being able to come out and spend, right? They're going to feel it probably before the Amazons, before the Googles. So what advice do you have for small business owners out there, this might be their first time going through something like this. What are you doing to prepare for a potential downturn?
I'm saving cash. Honestly, I'm trying to stockpile as much as I can. I told about four or five business owners, I'm like, hey, I'm not saying do this. I'm saying we all need to have a certain amount of money to weather that storm, and that's hard to come by. This will be one of your biggest signs that we're already in the recession if people don't know. I told her, like, go get a home equity line of credit. Like, tap into that equity just so you have it. Don't use it. Don't pull it. Just have it. Mm-hmm. Wells Fargo's already cut off all home equity line of credits effective. That was like 3-4 days ago.
Goodness.
Completely across the United States. Wow. They won't do any of them.
Wells Fargo's not a welcome guest on this podcast. I think they got to look at their ethical system
the big banks do it, every other bank does it too.
Right, it's coming.
So, but that's the thing, is have that ability. They want to accept new applications.
Right.
Secondly, obviously partner with a local smaller bank. Yeah. Do not partner with it, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, Bank of the West, if you don't have to. Nothing wrong with those banks, not saying anything against them. Wells Fargo, I will. But,
yes.
but get with a local bank where they make the decisions there.
Yes.
Because, you know, they're in your community too. They have just as much invested into your community as you do. They don't have an office in, you know, Minneapolis or Washington, D.C. or New York or Los Angeles. They're there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in your neighborhood. And that's the important part. And,
right.
And they're paying property taxes. And they're buying buildings. They're shopping at your store. So partner with a local bank. And I've got a bunch of them here that I like. They do big business. They do all sorts of stuff. But I understand all of my loans for every one of my companies I've ever had to get has been in a local bank.
Great.
I've been told no by every big bank on the planet. Even when I have millions in assets and revenue, I can't get anything in a big bank.
Wow.
I'm considered too risky. And I've talked to a lot of really successful business people here in Omaha. I'm talking to the guys who are in the 30 and 40 year room, and they said the same thing, that they can't get a loan with a big bank either.
Wow.
None of them can.
Yeah.
This one guy wanted $1 million loan for a new project, which is technically small when it comes to building projects.
Yeah.
And he's got $32 million in assets, and U.S. Bank told him no.
Wow.
It's
too
risky. He goes down to a local bank, they approved him in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Be like, it's no brainer.
I mean, you have to.
And so that's the thing that, you know, that's the big advice there. I mean, you got to be prepared. You know, supply and demand chain, I saw that coming, so I stockpiled ingredients well before anyone else did. Problem was, I went through a year and a half supply of creatine in 90 days because no one else had it.
Right.
So good for me for about 90 days, but then, because even then I was just guessing.
Right.
You know, if there's items, you know, seasonality-wise, you're going to plan twice as long in advance as you used to. So if you know you need something for the Christmas season, you need something for, you know, the spring season, the summer season, whatever your business has seasonality to it, plan for it ahead of time. Nothing is ever lost in pre-planning and doing your work significantly in advance of your competition. Just things in, oh, I've been doing this long, knowing this is for 20 years, cool. Line up your spring contracts before January hits if you usually wait till April.
Right.
Do those things so you have those locks in place. It's going to take a little extra work, a little bit more planning, and join networking groups, because simple fact is, the people at the Chamber of Commerce, people at the Small Business Association meetings, Centers for Networking Groups, whatever you want to call it, we're all facing the same thing. And just like when COVID happened, and I had so many scared business owners just reaching out to me, like, what's available to me, what's not, knowing that I'm nonstop reading 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Okay, the state of Iowa's doing this grant, state of Nebraska's doing this grant, they have the EIDL loans and the SBA, here's the paycheck. Oh, I have trouble getting it. Okay, call my guy over here, because he's got a lock on this. He's got a real, you know, I have people like waiting to get PPP loans. Happened to my own videographer, and happened to one of my franchisees, waiting with First National for 3 months.
Mm.
I go, ditch the con, go with my guy.
Yeah.
24 hours. So this is where these things are, because we've already done it. We've already made the mistakes. This is where you get a group of people all on the same kind of mission in the same room that legitimately want each other to succeed.
Right.
Who, some have 20 years more experience than you. Some may even work at a bank. I got you. All those kind of things, and just be brutally honest. Do not show for show's sake. Do not show up in grandstand. Be real. Simple fact is, I can only help you with what I am fully well aware of.
Right.
And, you know, there's a point in time where I may have issues myself, and I'm glad I've got these people that are in the car business, in the loaning, the insurance business, and the payroll services, and all these different things for me to lean on. So that's the biggest thing as we're heading into this is, A, get funds ready and different means of you know, credit available to you. I don't care if it's business credit cards. I don't care if it's a HELOC. I don't care what it is. Keep those things. Get those relationships. Guess what? Every one of those local banks, they're in the chambers too.
Yeah.
Because that's their driving force. Get to know them. Create a relationship so that you can sit in a banker's office and be like, okay, for real, this is what I need. And the banker can go, okay, here's what I need you to do. You right. can have, you can destroy that uncomfortable, I don't know if the banker really has this decision or not, if you have a relationship with that person. Yeah. And get yourself ready for that kind of stuff and have disaster plans. That's something else you need to do is, you know, I have, you know, phase one, two, and three. If this happens, we move into phase one. And this means that these hours get cut, this staff member stay, these ones don't. Because I'm committed to my full-time employees over part-time, obviously. Right. Phase two is, okay, you know, stuff has literally hit the fan. We're going to move these hours around, and here's where the corporate office, who actually structures all the companies, here's what we do to keep these are the most important positions in the company. And phase three, here's the worst-case disaster scenario. Here's how we do our buying. Here's how these are the steps we take. And all these things from here are planned out. And they've always been planned out, which is why I adapted in COVID so well. Because I've always been, I want to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. You just don't want to be stuck with your head under a blanket and no clue what to do. So, you know, for me, knowing what my steps are in case XYZ happens allows me to sleep at night. Yeah. It's always the fear of the unknown for business owners that freaks us out and makes us not enjoy our job. So take that guesswork out, do the work, and if you're not sure how to set that up, go to a chamber. Get in a small tips group, get in a networking group, and have other people break things down for you. It really is that easy. It doesn't cost hardly anything. I think you can join the Ralston Chamber for $100 a year. It's not anything. And then you have access to me and so many other successful business people in whatever area you're in and what state, doesn't matter. And it works the same in every county, city, and state, and everywhere I've been in the state of the United States. And people are there to help. People genuinely want to help you. So that's my biggest piece of advice. Join in. Get like-minded people and get your plans in place.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, man, for taking the time with me today. I learned a lot. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully everyone else did as well. But I can't wait. Go check out your local Hy-Vee stores. Have the protein popcorn. We'll be rolling out on those shelves right now. It's only at their two largest locations. The one...
Linden Market and 90th and Center. Right now, they'll be all 323 Hy-Vees, hopefully within the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Perfect. And if you are thinking about starting your fitness journey, if you're looking for a gym, I can attest for you, Iron Heaven Gym is the place you want to be. You know, I tell the story all the time. My wife was working out there. There was a gentleman going around being a jerk, telling her and another female that he was on every piece of equipment they tried to go to and making it a really unenjoyable time for my wife. One of your owners went over, one of your employees, who is also an owner because of how you have it structured, walked over and told him that that was unacceptable in your gym. Kicked him out, canceled his membership. I've never stopped my paying my membership even through COVID. I won't stop just because of that one experience.
Speaking for my son, 16, started training there when he was 14. He's handicapped, born with prenatal stroke, and so he's nervous. And listen, if he's been made to feel like at home there by every bodybuilder to my mom trains there for a while, guys. It's literally, we took all the things we hated about other gyms, got rid of them. No contracts, no yearly fees, supportive environment. Local owners are around who care. Mm-hmm. We just want to help everyone get fit. That's it. Get healthy. So.
Yeah, it's a great place to do that. Check it out. And also, you see the Rexius logos all over the city. Now you know what they do. Now you know how it's structured. If you're looking for anything, you don't have to be someone who's even going to the gym nonstop. If you're trying to be a healthier person, you want some vitamins, you want some stuff, stop in there and talk with them. I've only had good experiences there, and I'm sure you will too. But thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Business Ethics Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Business Ethics Podcast.